no Ching, no Bling today, but we are definitely cutting the chatter because in today's episode, we are talking about violence against women breaking the silence. Welcome to the Tucci Talks Wealth, Health, and Everything Else podcast. I'm your host, David Tucci, an educator, a father of three. Join me as I take you on a funky journey through life from a reckless young man to a humbled older man. Each week, I will offer different insights on my life experiences and the experiences of others and how that has shaped our present day realities. So let's begin our funky journey into improving our health, wealth, and you guessed it, everything else. Clap those hands, people. Because it's Monday. Still, Tucci Talks Podcast is the best I've seen.
Come on, let's dance.
Don't you know, I only want to listen to Tucci.
You know what else?
No other host can make me feel the way you do. Oh, oh, time to start this show. Oh, oh. So, let's go. Welcome, people, to another Monday and another episode of Tucci Talks Wealth, Health, and Everything Else. We are on episode number 24, and today we will be honoring the White Ribbon Campaign. The topic is violence against women. I did some research on this topic based on the excerpts given to me by today's guest. But before I forget, I need to give another shout out to Craig from Brampton for guessing Ice Ice Baby by Vanilla Ice. That's three shout outs in a row now. That deserves a Bitcoin special. You, my friend, get a free one-on-one consultation and we will go under the Bitcoin hood. And also, thanks for sending me that Vanilla Ice GIF with those MC Hammer pants. The GIF showed Vanilla Ice dancing and that brought me back. That's how we would dance. And it felt good. So just do it. Just dance. Anyway, today's karaoke was from another fun dance piece I did at a pep rally with two former basketball players a few years ago. So shout out to Justice Salmon and Nathaniel Charles. I actually should post that routine on the website if I can find the clip on my phone. It was a fun time. And I think a little more fun would go a long way right now, especially with this pandemic stressing everybody out. So hopefully it will all be over soon. Anyway, if you know this week's crazy karaoke, just contact me. Actually, just go to the website, TucciTalks75.com. There are a lot of great resources to peruse from past episodes. All the episodes are all there. So just go have a look. Anyway, before we get into the recap from last week, I want to set the stage for this week's episode. This is such a massive topic with so many implications, so I want to do my best to frame it right. During my homework for this episode, a case in Canada was highlighted. It was a case that went to the Supreme Court. I have a clip that's just over 2 minutes. If you want to check it out for yourself, go to YouTube and type RCMP cleared in Nicole Ryan case. So please indulge me and have a listen to this clip.
There's a new twist tonight in a legal case in Nova Scotia. It involves a woman who tried to hire a hitman to kill her ex-husband. The charges against her were eventually thrown out by the Supreme Court, which decided police largely ignored her pleas that her husband had been abusive. But today, an independent police watchdog decided there was no evidence of abuse. And as Ross Lord reports, it's raising serious questions about the decision to set her free.
5 years ago, Nicole Doucette arranged with a Mountie posing as a hitman to kill her husband.
I need the job done.
Yep.
Need it done this weekend.
Yep.
Is it possible?
It is possible.
Okay. How much are you asking?
Even shelling out a deposit on a $25,000 contract before the RCMP arrested and charged her. But Doucette, a Nova Scotia teacher, got off the hook. She argued she'd been subjected to physical and sexual abuse by her husband, Canadian Forces member Michael Ryan, allegations she claimed authorities ignored. Judges at various levels accepted her testimony, with the Supreme Court of Canada suggesting authorities were quicker to protect him than to help her deal with what it called his reign of terror. But a new report by the RCMP Complaints Commission clears investigators, saying the RCMP had no information to form a reasonable belief there was violence in the relationship or that Ms. Doucette was in danger, a finding that's consistent with what she told the supposed hitman.
Any beatings, like any beat you in, ever laid a hand on you?
For the Nova Scotia RCMP, there's a sense of vindication.
There may have been an impression left by the initial complaint that the RCMP was not prepared or didn't have the training. We have the training, we are prepared, and the CPC has supported us in that in their report.
The report says Nicole Doucette told the Mounties she was afraid of Michael Ryan, but only made allegations of abuse later while defending herself at trial. Nicole Doucette isn't commenting today, but her ex-husband now says the report raises new questions about why she was acquitted.
When you consider that 5 months prior to her trial, she didn't contest my application for sole custody of our daughter, and in our custody hearing never mentioned anything about domestic violence.
He says he has nothing to hide and wants a full public inquiry to sort out the facts once and for all. Ross Lohr, Global News, Halifax.
It's fascinating when you listen to that story, the thoughts that come to mind. I know a little more to this story, but that news clip is evidence how the media can really shape how they want you to think and feel. That's why it's incumbent on you to be a thinker. Anyway, thanks for your indulgence. Let's get into last week's recap. What did I learn from having Janelle on the podcast last week? You are the product. Social media is no longer the place to meet people with similar interests and build relationships. I guess it still can be, but that's up to you. Every algo is there to sell you something, to understand your habits and deliver the goods so you become the consumer they want. Please, please, just be aware. That's really all you can do because social media is here to stay. On to today. I have known my next guest for over 20 years, but I have not seen her since my university days. She is a professor of political science at Laurentian University and an ongoing research associate at the Institute for Intergovernmental Relations, Queen's University. She completed her doctorate in political science at Carleton University. She comes to us today to discuss her newest book, No Legal Way Out, R.V. Ryan, Domestic Abuse and the Defense of Duress. It is with great pleasure that Tucci Talks welcomes Professor Nadia Varelli. Welcome to Tucci Talks, and thanks for coming on the show today. This is an important topic, and it needs to be discussed. The timing of it couldn't be more perfect with the White Ribbon campaign. So just for the listeners, can you just give a brief explanation on what the White Ribbon campaign is?
Okay, so if I'm not mistaken, again, I'm almost positive it came out, or it started soon after the Montreal massacre. So for those of you who don't know, an engineering student male charged the halls or went into Polytechnique, a university, engineering university in Montreal, and purposely killed women.
This was back in 1989.
Yeah, and the story, when you think about it, it is quite tragic. So walked into a classroom, literally asked or split the room half with men, half all the men on one side, the other, and women on the other side, asked the men to leave.
What? That happened?
Yeah. Yes.
Why did the women ask the men to leave?
His idea. Well, it came out in letters or notes that were found. Maybe his diary. I have vague recollection of the story.
Right.
But he had it against women. He felt that his failures as an engineering student was because of opportunities afforded to women, opportunities that they didn't earn, rather opportunities because they were just women. So he blamed women for his shortfalls. And so he proceeded to do that. And so the white women campaign or ribbon campaign, to the credit of these men, began as men standing up for women, standing up against violence against women.
And I teach high school, and they began just on Wednesday with this white ribbon campaign, and they do mm-hmm. reflections just to remember. And I think it's very important how we phrase it. And it's called the Montreal Massacre for a reason.
Massacre. Yeah.
And do you think it's important to give it that type of label?
Yes. I think, as we know with anything, terms matter. There are terms that evoke certain emotional reactions. And terms that don't. So calling it, you know, the killing or whatnot, it doesn't have the same magnitude in your mind as a massacre. And so, yeah, I think it's very important we call it the massacre.
And it was massacre. And the gentleman's name was Mark Lepine?
Mark Lepine, oui.
And did in those notes, was there like a history of how he was raised? What was this idea? Where did
not,
it come?
Yeah, not that I know of. Again, I haven't looked too much into his mind or what shaped his thoughts, but it was both at the time, and we still talk about it now, largely understood as him being anti-feminist.
Okay.
And blaming women for his shortcomings.
Yeah, and the reason why I say that is because you like me, we grew up with Italian fathers who are strong father figures, and we were disciplined a lot, physically abused, verbally abused, and people thought that was normal. I remember a story where we were disciplined at school. The teacher called home. Me and my brother were fighting. Teacher calls home. And my father comes to get us, and he's abusing us right in front of everybody. And teachers in the hallway are peeking down, seeing what's happening, mortified. And this was seen, we shared this story, and this type of behavior was said to be normal back then. This is the way our fathers disciplined us. So mm-hmm. are we kind of, by saying that it's normal, I'm saying today, I tell that story today, oh yeah, but that's how it was back then. By us saying that, are we perpetuating this type of behavior as we move forward?
So on that, so you're a teacher now, Dave.
Yeah.
And you have legal obligations. We've talked about that. If you were to witness something like that to happen, you would be not only legally compelled, but I would like to think morally compelled.
Absolutely.
To call child services. By us saying, as joking about the disciplinary actions our parents took, we're not necessarily, we've normalized it for us, our experiences, right? But I don't think we're normalizing it for today because we wouldn't accept it today. So we're not perpetuating it. But at the same time, I think we're also excusing.
Right.
And this is not a damnation of our parents, right?
Right,
You know.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, there was a time where it was okay to, you know, discipline your children, and no one thought anything of it, but it didn't make it right.
Right, right.
But so it's, we're maybe excusing behavior in the past, but as for perpetuating it, violence on, violence against children in public, openly in the public, we wouldn't stand for that. We wouldn't hesitate to call authority. But
what about, I'm just thinking right now, you have me thinking, what about, there's an opinion out there that, our society's become soft.
Snowflakes?
Yeah, what the heck? What does that mean? There's people that say, yeah, we're becoming soft. We can't hit our kids. We can't, this political correctness. We're just becoming soft. And that's why we have no resilience. What do you say to that?
I call bullshit. That's what I really say, Dave.
Yeah.
It's people standing up for themselves. Are we becoming snowflakes because we're talking about how it's wrong to hit children in public? How it's
but
wrong.
No, you understand what I'm talking about.
Oh, like, absolutely.
The idea that we're soft.
Yeah, no, it actually is a soft spot with me because more often than not, it's white men or people in power, in positions of power. And more often than not, that is white men that are talking about that. So me ask, I'm a 45-year-old woman. I'd like to think I'm an accomplished woman. And if you were to refer to me as a girl, that's an offense.
Right.
So me asking you to refer to me as a woman, I don't think that's me being soft. It's me being assertive.
So listening to you say this, what I'm understanding is words matter.
Absolutely, they matter, Dave. You know this. You teach high school children. You're raising three strong boys. You know words matter. You know words.
The reason why I say that, because some listeners can say, Nadia, who cares? You're a girl, female, woman, who cares?
I care. Okay. And that's what matters, right? And so one thing I'm trying to teach my stepdaughter and my nieces and nephews for that matter, it's not only what you intend with what you say, but it's how your words are received. So if I say something that offends you, that strikes something,
right,
then you should be able to say to me, stop referring to me as such, because it diminishes my dignity. So
that's the part I love. That's the part I love, that you have to assert. How many people do not assert because they're scared?
Exactly. And that's the problem. Or they're dismissed.
Or dismissed.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, as you say, why does it matter? And I get that often, right? Not just me. Like, why does it matter? Girl, woman. But it means something. When you refer to someone in diminutive terms, it's to assert your authority over that person. It's to cut that person back down to size.
Okay. Right? Well, yeah. Well said. So let's get into this topic, this episode title, violence. I called it violence against women, breaking the silence. You sent me excerpts from your book and I had some visceral reactions to them. Obviously I'm male. And so it's against me. Not me personally, but against the male gender. Mm-hmm. First, tell us, when is your book coming out and what is the title of your book?
First, I want to clarify something. Your visceral reaction, yay, because that's what we hoped for. but it's not necessarily against you as a white male,
right?
But it's against society. So this is why I love this title, Breaking the Silence. We need to talk about it because it's real. Right? And we need to talk about that it's happening. It may be happening.
So can I interject for a second?
Yeah.
So do you think, this might touch a nerve. Do you think the people that are objecting, if they have these objections, are white male?
More often than not, yes.
Yeah.
And I don't have stats for you. This is all anecdotal.
Okay.
But more well, I know we'll get into this, but certain types of violence aren't seen as violent. You know, we started this with talking about the story of you and Bob, and at the time it wasn't seen as violence.
Right.
And there is a power dynamic in there. There's no way in heck you would have defended yourself against your father, right?
No. No chance.
Right? Because he is the authority figure.
Correct.
I don't know about you. Again, I'm 45 and I still don't swear in front of my dad. Like,
right.
Like there's that same imbalance when we're talking about relationships, women stuck in abusive relationships. So on your main question, so the title of the book, No Legal Way Out, RV Ryan, Domestic Abuse and the Defense of Duress. As I mentioned to you, we're hoping the book comes out no later than February, 2021. It's in the post-production stage right now. So, yes.
And you gave me, like I said, you were able to give me some excerpts. Mm-hmm. And when I was digesting it, There was the Nicole Doucette case that you talk about immediately, and you referred to it multiple times. Why is this case so important, and why did you choose her case specifically?
Okay, so bit of a background with the publishing house. It's UBC Press Landmark Cases, where they ask academics to write books on a particular case and look at the legal and political and social implications of it. My co-author Laurie Chambers and I were already working on violence against women, and so we started looking into this case. And this case is important because it introduces a possible new defense that is available to women who attempt to defend themselves. So a bit of a background on the case. Nicole Ryan, that's her married name, now Doucette, was in an abusive relationship where her husband almost immediately began abusing her, the physical abuse she suffered under his hand. It wasn't the typical physical violence that we understand. So she didn't have broken bones, she didn't have bruises, she didn't have black eyes, none of that. But he would, the story she told, he would punch the wall right by her face.
Right.
Just
right.
To assert his strength. He was an ex-army. He would point a gun to her temple and tell her he was able to kill her if he wanted to. So we're veering.
So that's that psychological type.
The psychological. Yeah. But he would grab her neck in a certain way so he wouldn't leave bruises, or bruises weren't that visible. Anyway, she finally mustered the courage to leave him. But this psychological and the verbal abuse and the threats continued. And so she felt, as her title indicates, that she had no legal way out. She tried contacting police to let them know that this was going on, but they kept on dismissing her complaints as civil. So nothing that they can do. It wasn't criminal, so he couldn't be charged with anything.
You know, do a lot of women face that?
Absolutely.
Where they feel like they can't?
Absolutely. Absolutely, Dave.
How scary is that?
Put yourself in a situation. Well, bring yourself back to your childhood. Imagine you were in that situation as an adult where you had someone, I don't want to put words, but imagine you're in a situation where someone controlled every aspect of your life and you couldn't.
Yeah, that's
physically, emotionally, financially, legally, you couldn't fight back. Imagine what that does to your psyche. Yeah.
And we were talking earlier off air about you were telling me these abuses, and you said financial abuse. Mm-hmm. And I said, what's that? Like, I'm sure there's people who would say, what's financial abuse?
Financial abuse is, it goes beyond this idea of controlling household budgets. It's controlling how much a particular person can spend and what they can buy. So, you know, giving an allowance to go grocery shopping, but specifying exactly what to buy.
But when I hear that, it's like, how does it get to that point where somebody's asking you, what can you give me this allowance so I can go shopping, grocery shopping?
It's, think of it, Dave, almost like a cult situation, right? So I'm sure you know the Charlie Manson story.
Yep.
Right. And these were, or Jonestown, these were for the most part individual people. They were autonomous, and it was a slow psychological abuse. So what happens in a relationship that is characterized as coercive control, the beatings, the abuse, be it physical, verbal, psychological, it doesn't happen day one. It's a slow progression. It's not uncommon for women trapped in abusive relationships to not have any financial independence, meaning they have no access to the bank accounts, to not have access to a social circle. More often than not, women trapped in abusive relationships have no friends, because their partners have convinced them that these friends aren't good enough, or they're too embarrassed to go and speak to their friends. They've lost contact with their family members. The beatings or the physical violence, when it starts, it's very minimal, right? And then the apology comes. And then the professing love and promising not to do it again. But then it begins to escalate. So how does it get to that? It's years of psychological trauma.
Don't friends or the circle, like you mentioned, the social circle, don't they kind of have an intervention?
Do they?
I don't know.
You're asking me.
Wouldn't they?
Ideally. So, you know, we have no problem imposing an intervention on friends who we think are drinking too much or are doing too many drugs, right?
Right.
But more often than not, spousal abuse or domestic abuse is seen as a private matter that people don't get involved. And more often than not, women are ashamed. Women tend to blame themselves for the abuse. So, you know, he did this to me because I snapped back, or I did.
Right,
this.
Right.
So they're embarrassed. But it's, and this is the problem with society, and it begins with law. Domestic abuse is seen as a private matter. What happens behind closed doors shouldn't be any of our business, but it is our business because it continuously affects society.
And hopefully, I'm through education, and it starts to change.
Yes.
And I want to get into what you mentioned on page 2. Tell us about the structural inequity and community values and beliefs that underlie male violence against women. So kind of like synthesize
or perpetuates
that.
Or, you know, excuses.
Yeah.
Despite the advancements we've made in Canadian society, we still don't have gender equality in our society. So there continues to be a power relation. A good example is pay equity. Women still earn, I believe it's 70 to 72% of what men earn.
But you're talking about in the private, because I teach, a female who teaches makes the same amount as me.
I'm talking the wider scale.
Okay.
Okay. But also, so how does this play out? More often than not, it's women, even though we have laws where on the surface they're gender neutral. I'm thinking child leave or parental leave. More often than not, it's still women who take the year off. And this interrupts their career and advancement in career. We've made some strides in not holding that against women or men who do take parental leave, but it is mostly women, which makes sense because if women are earning less than men in a relationship, it makes sense for the woman to take.
So
that's on
just from a math standpoint.
A math point, but then we need to deeper. Why are women still earning less than men? Why are women still being shepherded into quote unquote female or lower paying jobs than men?
When you say they're being shepherded,
just societal. So nursing is still female dominated. Office management is still female dominated. Sales is still female dominant. And we're talking about lower paid jobs. We're not talking about, you know, CEOs in like Amazon or something like that, right? So it's how the values that we're taught that are subconscious, that guide us. And here, you know, when you talk about community values, think about how women should act. What is the proper role of a woman? So we went to, full disclosure to your viewers, we went to high school together.
Right.
And another full disclosure, I'm not your typical female. I'm not feminine. I'm not quote unquote girly. I'm sure you remember that, Dave. It was like, you know, I was quote unquote tomboyish, right? There's often this association with how women ought to act, what's ladylike, right? And this does cloud your judgment and what you can do in life.
But females are involved in that, is what I'm saying.
Absolutely. It's not just men. So it's not men versus women.
And right.
I don't want to leave you or your viewers with that impression. But I'm talking about values, societal values that are so ingrained with us that we don't even think twice of them. Well, here's a true story. So I have five nieces and nephews, and this was years ago. My oldest niece and nephew got together and they decided to ask me for Legos for Christmas. And I, God bless them, you know, they thought it was such an expensive gift that it's better if they ask me, you know, a joint gift. Fine. And I'm a no-frills type of person. So I walk into Toys R Us and I have no time to walk up and down the aisles. So I ask an employee on the floor, poor guy, he must have been a high school student who was just working part-time. Yeah. And then here I come in and I'm like, where are your Legos? And I was in a rush because it was Christmas shopping, right? And it was Vaughn Mills. Who wants to be at Vaughn Mills at Christmas? Anyway, walk in and I'm like, where are your Legos? And he's like, four aisles down in the boys section. So in my frantic move, I'm walking and then I just stop. I turned around. I'm like, Legos are in the boys section? He's like, yes. I'm like, because Legos are a boy's toy? He's like, I guess. I'm like, girls don't play with like, and this poor kid,
guy.
I know, right? And then I saw that and I'm like, oh my gosh. I'm like, I am so sorry. Got the Legos. But then Dave, I started looking at the toys. So Toys R Us is a bit better now, but there's a girl section and the predominant colors are pink.
Yeah.
Right. You look at the boys section. It's like deep blues and purples. You're looking at the toys. Apparently those mock kitchen sets are only for girls. Like these rough and tumble toys, those are for boys. So we start early, you know, dolls are
absolutely,
for girls.
Absolutely.
Boys that want dolls, there's got to be something with that, right? So this idea of what it is to be feminine versus what it is to be masculine. And here's the reality. Women are not the only victims in this. Men are victims too, right? I think boys are taught very early in life that they need to be tough. You know what I mean? They play with G.I. Joe, not Barbie.
Right, yeah, yeah.
Right? You know, they kickbox, they don't dance. And so that does this aggression, this toughness, this masculinity does play a role later on in life.
That's what I'm thinking. And when you're talking right now, when you're telling me this, I'm thinking a lot of guys will say, yeah, but that's why we're getting soft in society. We're becoming soft.
Are we?
I don't know.
But
I would think we should. Yeah.
Define soft, Dave. Here, I'm going to put you on the spot.
Yeah. So this is what my definition of soft would be. We're not resilient. We give up very quickly. There's no mental toughness. And then you say, what's mental toughness? Again, this whole idea of being resilient, accepting failure. This is my definition could be different than some other white dude's definition. My definition is I encourage kids, because I teach phys ed, go through it, fail, attempt. You're going to continually fail, but it's okay. That's what resilience is. Understanding that you're not going to be good at something or great at something, you're going to do it anyway, and you're not going to ask for help right away, for example. I'm not looking, when I grew up, it was always about fighting. I'm not talking about that soft. That's a different matter altogether. I think I grew up like that because I was around that kind of violence all the time. So that was the way we solved problems. Our default mechanism, Nadia, was fighting. I don't condone that, obviously, but what we did.
But how do you define fighting? Because I used to fight with my sisters.
No, we would brother. Like. I remember the movie The Outsiders.
Yes.
So think of me, 12 years old, and I told my oldest son this. I'm 12 years old. I think Bob, or I'm 11 or 10, and Bob's 12 years old, and he's got a chain. And I got a butterfly knife and we're going to go to rumble these guys.
Oh my God, Dave.
And I told my oldest son, I said, I knew how to get that butterfly knife into like the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 step. And I got the blade out. Okay. That's the kind of violence. And our parents didn't know we were doing this.
No.
Cause you know that we were not supervised. It was unsupervised play for hours.
Yeah.
So if you had a problem, there's a lot of bullying. You don't tell your parents. You don't tell an adult. This is, I'm saying, as boys, we're conditioned like this, Nadia.
Girls too, though. And I think with the bullying.
So that's what I'm saying. By that's what people would say. And maybe there's listeners out there that agree with me about today. They don't do that. That's what soft is. We handled our business.
We handled, but I think we underestimate, not to say that you have psychological issues, we underestimate the psychological.
Absolutely.
Well, Dave, we know being in high school, there were a couple of male students that were picked on, that were bullied because of their sexual orientation.
Right, right.
When I think back on the treatment of some of them, I'm horrified. I'm not saying I participated in it, but I never said anything.
Right.
I laughed along.
We knew
with everyone.
Yeah, we laughed along.
Yeah, but the thing is, we don't know the psychological harm that caused. As for toughening it out, I agree. This idea of going back, like again, I wasn't very girly. I was. Like no one messed. I don't want to come off as just like tough.
Yeah.
No one really messed with me in high school because I was always bigger and I like to think stronger than everyone else. That I was tough, right? But I was seen as very unfeminine at the same time. So I wasn't, you know. You remember, you know, the female students I used to hang out with, right? Very girly,
absolutely.
Right? So it does affect both, right? So are we? Soft. I understand soft differently. I get what you're saying, and I know that idea soft is out there. You know, this I often criticize. So my sister, for instance, her kids are older now, but the supervised play. Like the first time I heard that they had a play date, I'm like, what the heck is that?
Right. Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Our playtime was you go outside, someone's bound to be out there, right? If you know someone pushes you on the floor, you push them back. You don't complain.
Right.
So I get that. But I understand soft. I think the way it's being used now or it's often used, be it in social media or in the classroom, is this idea of people are more compassionate, right? So
I think that's a good thing.
I agree.
I love that.
Like, I don't think there's anything wrong with being compassionate of other people and being aware of what we're saying and what we're doing and thinking about how this may affect someone else. So, you know, getting back to the topic at hand, right? You know, we might think it's not inconsequential that, you know, someone is fully controlling someone's budget, fully controlling someone's financial or access to financial independence, but we don't know the psychological harm that
right.
someone.
Right.
We don't know how that may lead to, you know, feelings of entrapment or feelings of not being able to get out and having no other avenue. Or no way of surviving.
So when I told colleagues that I was doing this episode, there was discussion, and some of the things they were saying, they were female colleagues. I'm surprised. So what I want to talk about is the wider ongoing patterns of male violence and dominance that you and your co-author claim are not exceptional, but are actually quite common. Because when I heard these stories, I'm like, really? That's happening? I was like, how?
Yeah.
I made up a word, Nadia. It's beyond oblivious. Bolivious.
Oh, Bolivious. I'm writing that down, Dave.
Beyond oblivious. So that's me. When they're telling me these stories, I'm like oblivious to this. I'm like, this is happening today? These women are not shocked at all. So that's why I talk about, would you give the listeners some examples and explain what you mean by wider ongoing patterns of male violence and dominance.
So first of all, I'm going to ask you and your listeners to forget the traditional understanding of violence. More often than not, when we think of violence, we're thinking of the movie, The History of Violence. We're thinking about you and Bob with, you know, knives blazing out, and that's violence. We often associate violence with physical violence. But there are underlying actions that are considered to be violent. So I think when we were talking last time, you brought up a story about how you were having an equity meeting mm-hmm. at work, and you told one of your female colleagues not to be emotional. And because if you're too emotional, people won't take you seriously.
Right.
Don't take this the wrong way. That's a form of violence. That's a form of telling someone the way she is right now is not good enough. You need to stop doing that and being someone else. You need
so is that a form? Like, I know we're going to get into this coercive
control. It's not a form of coercive control.
Okay.
It'd be different if, want your listeners to know clearly, I don't think you abuse your position of power. I don't think you abuse your wife, your child, none of that. But I'm using you as an example.
Absolutely.
It would be a form of coercive control if it was an ongoing pattern. Gotcha. So every time you and your wife went out in public, you told her exactly how to behave. You controlled, that would be coercive control. But this idea of these stories, I'll give you a personal story. So we used to go clubbing together, right? Mm-hmm. And you know, and women know this. We always have our guard on, right? There's this, I like to call it the bitch shield, yeah. Right? So when you're, especially in bars or in clubs, when you're approached, you know how to react.
And by the way, I got a new definition of bitch.
Which is?
In total control of herself.
Yes. Thank you. I love that. Dave, I love that. But I don't know if you remember the clubbing days. Like, the way guys would approach women, it was just like, my God.
I know.
Right? But here's the thing. I was prepared for it. So I had, like, I was a total bitch when we were out clubbing. I took none of that crap. Again, I was prepared for it, but I'm not prepared for it in a professional setting.
Gotcha.
And so this one incident, I'm walking down the university hallway, not the current university I'm at. And one of my older colleagues, and he was quite old, he was mid to late 60s, looked at me up and down, like checking me out, telling me that I'm quite tall. And he said it in a tone that made me feel really uncomfortable. And then he asked me if I liked tall men, right? It's kind of like, you know, a line you would throw at a woman at a club.
Right, right.
That is common. And it's that, you know, and he later claimed that he didn't mean anything by it, which I till this day, I don't believe that to be true. But that's a form of violence.
Right.
You know, remarking on, we always make comments on how a woman dresses. You know, this, she's either frumpy looking or she looks quote unquote slutty, or, you know, I'm ready to throw it at her, or like whatever the
saying. Yeah, yeah.
I don't know what's cool these days, but you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
Those are ways of reminding a woman of her place in society. In the workplace, it's worse because it can lead to, you know, pushing or preventing your promotion or preventing any advancement in your workplace. And, you know, drawing on me as the example, and that was just one incident, but I brought it up and I made complaints, and lo and behold, my contract wasn't renewed. Surprise,
really?
Surprise. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. It was a great, like, my life is so much better now. And I knew this was going to happen. It wasn't only going through with me, a good friend of mine at the same time. And we both made conscious decisions. And David was, can I sleep at night?
Right.
This reminds me
of the Harvey Weinstein thing, though. Many women probably felt the same way, that they know they're going to not get a role if they speak up. And
well, you know, drawing on our parents' experience. So when I told my mom the story, like the look on her face, Dave, I thought she was like, you know, that look our parents would give when we did something wrong as kids.
Yeah, yeah.
She had that look. So she was going to kill someone. And I'm like, oh my God. And I told her I'm handling it. This is how I handled it. And then she told me she was really proud of me. She went through the same thing when she first immigrated here, but she couldn't say anything because she couldn't risk losing her job because she had a family, you know, she had the four kids by then.
Absolutely.
She needed the money, right? So my point here is there's been, I'm in a lucky position. I was in a lucky position and I'm grateful that I came out of this, but I'm the exception. I'm not the rule. And the sexual harassment that I was exposed to or that I was subjected to pales in comparison with some of the ones that I've heard friends and colleagues. So yeah.
So that's that, that's example. Those are examples then of how it's continuing.
Well, absolutely it is. And these, you know, structural inequalities, these community values, it's, here's a good example. Do you remember when the Trump tapes came out about, you know, quote-unquote grab pussy?
How
do they excuse this? It's just boy locker room talk.
Right.
It's just boys being boys. But it's not boys being boys, right? It does have an effect. This is, it is common. And it's common in the corporate workforce where women are often diminished are silenced. Yeah, and the Harvey Weinstein example you brought up, I think is quite on point on this.
But at least we're moving to out this.
Yes. Which is why, again, and I'm pausing to think, breaking the silence, the Me Too movement.
Right.
It's, we need to tell our stories. We need to, because I think what empowers people in these relationships or in these situations is knowing that you're not the only one that goes through it. Validating.
That's your, huge. Knowing your, that you're not your the sense. Only one. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
You say in your book, current reality of pervasive violence against women is rooted in our history of women's legal subordination, particularly in marriage. Yeah. So how is marriage related to women's legal subordination?
Okay, and so
you think, one more and then you can respond. Do you think this criticism of marriage still applies today in Canada?
Yes. Marriage is an institution, as I'm planning my wedding, right? Is an institution of, it's not as bad as it used to be, but let's start with the past. So in Canada, I'm not exactly sure when the law changed, but in Canada, women were automatically given their husband's name. So you ceased to exist as a person, right? Because you took on your husband's last name. Even today, it would be unheard of for a man to take on his wife's last name. That would be unheard. I don't even, it's 2020. I don't know of a case where not only does a husband take on the last name of his wife, but the children automatically take on the name, the last name of their fathers. That's embedded in law. That's embedded in our society, societal values. What would, I'm going to pick on Bob because, you know, yeah, it's Bob.
Yeah, it's Bob. We could it's pick Bob. On Bob. Yeah.
Like, love you, Bob. but let's say you go to Bob, that you decided that your children were going to have your wife's last name, not your last name.
Yeah.
What would his reaction be? He
would be probably thinking, why?
Yeah.
I think.
In that tone, too.
I think, the thing is, if you can explain, if you can have a rationale, what's the difference? Is what I'm trying to say now. Who cares if my kids have my wife's last name or my last name? Or
okay,
my father would be pissed. I'll tell you that much.
Oh yeah, and I'm sure your mom would be disappointed.
And my mom would. Yeah, I think they. You know what?
Absolutely.
I'm gonna ask them. I think they would. Yeah.
Oh, and then they're gonna hate me. And then you know, it's like she's putting crazy thoughts in your head. No, think about it. It's you know why. Why does it take on the father's last name? Because history tells us that a child is legitimate when there's both a mom and a dad, right?
Interesting.
A woman is now legitimate, or she's made an honest woman because now she's married. Well, here's a true story. Okay. Sorry, this is not, shouldn't be about me. 45. I'm successful. I'm one of the, like, you know, in a minority with a female in a PhD in a male dominated field. I bought my own house. Didn't need, you know, any, I didn't have to get married to buy a house.
Right.
You know, it was, I saved, I did it on my own. So you would think if that's not going to make your parents proud, then what is? Anyway, meet Boris, who's now my fiance, future husband. So I finally, quote unquote, settled down and got serious. So this would have been 5 or 6 years ago. My dad sat me down for a conversation and he was telling me how much he likes Boris. And then he looked at me and he goes, I'm happy that you finally found someone to take care of you.
Please tell me you responded to him.
Oh, so I looked at him. I'm like, I don't need Boris to take care of me. First and foremost, I make more money than him. Second, he's living in my house. Yeah. So, you know, I go to him, I'm like, Daddy, I go, you taught me to be self-sufficient. Like when I first moved out of the house, he bought me like a toolkit and he gave me all of this stuff to, you know, be self-sufficient. So I'm going on and I'm like, you know, like drawing on my feminist rhetoric, like I am my own woman. And my mom looks at me, she goes, can you just let him have this one? Let him have this one. I'm like, okay, Daddy, yes. He's going to take care of me. But there still is that sense.
I know. I just couldn't say that.
Yeah. You know, there's something wrong with you if you're a single woman of a certain age. So marriage legitimizes you. Marriage not only legitimizes a relationship, but it legitimizes your place in the pecking order. I think up until 1983 or 84, it wasn't considered rape if a husband raped his wife. It was seen as being in a state of constant consent. Until this day, even though rape in marriage is recognized as a crime, it's still diminished by our justice system. So, you know, you have...
Have there been complaints of married women saying that they've been raped by their husband?
Well, the case that we look at, she talks about how she was raped. But it's not the only one, right?
Yeah.
And there's this great line, like, because we had to hear the court case, when her lawyer asks her, why didn't you fight back or why didn't you report it? She's like, I'm married to him. Like, I can't. Like, it's not rape. I'm married to him. So this idea that, you know, a man owns you or women are a piece of their property, because that's how marriage began, right? Yeah, so think about the traditions associated with, be it Catholic or otherwise, marriage, right? So the woman is given away. We've changed them a bit. Before, it was predominantly the father giving away the bride.
Right.
Right? Now you'll have both parents, but you still have that giving away as if she's something that was a possession and now going to be possessed by someone else. Do you know why women, the tradition for women to wear the veil over their face?
Purity?
Because women were seen as seductive. And so the idea was to cover her face so as to prevent men in the church or in the congregation to be seduced by her. And the only time she can be quote unquote unveiled was in front of her future husband. You know, we've changed the terminology now, but before it was man and wife. Now it's husband and wife. But the name, you know, you still have to legitimize your children. It's seen, you're seen.
Okay, can I ask you then? Mm-hmm. I'll put you on the spot. Are you changing your name?
No. But here's the reality. I have my father's name. I don't have my mom's name or my grandmother's name. So no, I'm not. And part of it is... when you get married, so we're both Italian, right? But when you get married, when you're older, you have more autonomy. My parents are just grateful that I'm like finally settling down, right? Gotcha. But no, I never had the intention of changing my name. And I remember being young saying that I never want to change my name. And both my parents and my siblings, for that matter, were like, what? Why wouldn't you do that? Like I was... You know, Boris always jokes that if I grew up during the Salem witch hunt, I would have been burnt at the stake because I'm so contrarian. So no, I'm not changing my name, but a lot of it is also career. All my publications are under Nadia Varelli. So
fair enough. Yeah,
like,
fair enough.
I wouldn't do that.
So let's get back to the case of Nicole Doucette.
Yes.
And this term came up and I want you to give an explanation in your own words. What is battered woman syndrome?
Okay. So battered woman syndrome speaks to the psychological effect of women being constantly abused by their husbands or by their partners. So it's more often than not understood as a cyclical event. So it starts off with, you know, verbal abuse or threats, and then it escalates. There's something that triggers it where physical violence is then seen. And then there's the I'm sorry phase. And I love you. I promise never to do it again. And this is a cycle that occurs throughout the relationship, be it, you know, marriage or common law or whatnot. Yeah.
So why you said that this is an inadequate means of understanding. Yes. Yeah.
Well, because more often than not, there isn't, well, we talked about it. Violence isn't just physical. Okay. And so when we were relying, academics and you know, policymakers and whatnot, looking into violence against women, when we were relying solely on this idea of battered women syndrome, it ignored a lot of the other violence going on. So that's the first problem with it. Second, it assumes that there's always that I love you, I'm sorry, this will never happen phase, that there's that reprieve. But we know now that that's not the case. And it also, then it almost puts a blame on women, like the psychological, you know, effect that is having on women, where she feels trapped and she can't leave, without looking at the other means that have been employed to trap the woman, or this idea that, you know, there's good abused women and there's bad abused women, women that do the right things and women that, you know, choose not to leave or choose not to think. And so we don't use this idea of the battered women syndrome. It was a good starting point. It got us thinking about understanding violence against women, especially in relationships. So it started the conversation and started the study in that, but it doesn't capture the whole picture.
So is this where this whole idea of coercive control theory comes in?
Yeah.
And so what is coercive control theory, and why is it an important development in this area of research?
So coercive control is this idea, it's this recognition that an abusive relationship goes beyond just the physical abuse. It includes, as we talked about, financial abuse.
Yep.
It includes psychological abuse. It includes verbal abuse, and can or cannot include physical abuse. So it looks at the whole picture. Why is it important? Because it forces us to recognize that there are forms of abuse that affect women. So stalking is a form of abuse. If you don't feel safe going to work, if you don't feel safe, you know, going back home, that is a form of abuse. It's a way of controlling someone.
I want to share my screen with you, and I have a clip. I don't know how long ago it was, but Barbara Walters is interviewing Sean Connery.
Okay.
And Sean Connery recently passed away. Okay. I'm going to share this clip, and I want to know what you think.
Okay. You did an interview in which you said, not the worst thing to slap a woman now and then. As I remember, you said you don't do it with a clenched fist. It's better to do it with an open hand. Mm. Yeah. Remember that?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I didn't love that.
I haven't changed my opinion.
You haven't?
No. Not at all.
You think it's good to slap a woman?
No, I don't think it's good.
I don't think it's bad.
I don't think it's that bad. I think that it depends entirely on the circumstances and if it merits it. Yeah.
What would merit it?
Well, if you have tried everything else, and women are pretty good at this, that they can't leave it alone. Yeah? They don't want to have the last word, and you give them the last word, but they're not happy with the last word. They want to say it again and get into a really provocative situation. Then I think it's absolutely right.
To give her a good slap?
Yeah, absolutely.
Finish her!
What if she gives you a good slap back?
Well, then you get into another area. I mean, then maybe she's getting to like it, and then it becomes something else. I don't know. But I think that it's the last resort. He's not going to do it because he wants to do it. Huh?
Wait till people see this interview. Are you going to get mail?
Might get some.
So Sean Connery just passed, and he's like this icon of masculinity.
Absolutely.
He played James Bond. And now here you have this gentleman saying that it's okay to slap a woman.
Are you sure you want to call him a gentleman?
Fair enough.
Am I surprised? Yeah, do we know what year?
1987.
Rest assured, if this came out now, like if he had said something like that now, or anyone of Sean Connery's status, it wouldn't have. Am I surprised of the time? No.
But apparently, somebody had told me now on his deathbed, he still stood by that.
Oh, that doesn't surprise me. He's of a certain era. Again, does it make it right? No.
Right.
The important thing is, does society recognize what he said to be wrong? And it seems to me Barbara Walters did, and she was a pioneer in her industry. I wish she had been more forceful, but I understand why she didn't. She was a young woman in a predominantly male field. It's disgusting what he said, but what he said, I'm not sure it's any different than what's being said today. You know, this idea, she probably deserved it. And it's often associated with these myths that are being perpetuated with, why a woman was raped or why a woman was smacked or beaten by her partner. You know, she was probably yapping too much. She probably didn't know when to stop and so on and so forth. Again, it's horrifying. But look at
the football. Look at with football players. We witnessed it. Ray Rice.
Yeah.
Knocked his fiance out, dragging her by unconscious out of the elevator. And what did she say after? She basically said, we worked it out and they're still together.
That
he knocked her out. He knocked
her out. No, I know.
Out.
Yeah.
Did you see the video?
I did. It was very hard to watch. So two things really upset with it. Her coming out and saying we worked it out, it's fine, didn't surprise me. Again, if you put it in the context, of course, of control.
Right.
More often than not, abused women or abused people often make excuses. Because your very identity, your very survival is attached to your abuser. But what really upset me and what was the final straw with regards to me watching football, because you remember we were avid football watchers, right? Was when it was that Sunday, was it either Sunday night or Monday night, when they were talking about it and the two commentators were saying, the NFL doesn't stand by this. And they were saying all the right things, but right behind them were the cheerleaders. Like dressed in like basically nothing and doing nothing but, exploiting their sexuality. Right. And then the expectation of cheerleaders in the NFL where they're paid next to nothing and all that jazz. So it was, for me, it was the final straw. But the Ray Rice, it's like, gosh, okay, again, I was Dallas Cowboys fan, and they were like just the hotbed,
right?
But even like soccer, look at Cristiano Ronaldo. Arguably the best soccer player right now. The guy's a rapist.
Right.
He paid someone off. And then people like, when I challenge people on this, because heaven forbid you question this top athlete. Well, she agreed to being paid off, because the American justice system is a lot more messed up than ours. Ours is bad with regards to bringing charges of rape, that sometimes it's not even worth bringing charges in because you're re-victimized all over again.
And I want to bring in one more, and then maybe we can kind of wind down with how we can help, like what society could do. But another athlete, everybody glorified Kobe when he died, but Kobe was a rapist.
And what made me laugh, and I was one of them, I'm at the point of my life where I give quote unquote zero fucks. So everyone's like, oh, poor Kobe and blah, blah, blah. Yeah, okay, fine. Tragic accident. I don't want to say no, but let's not forget who he was.
That's what me and Bob were saying. We were saying, like, let's not forget what he did.
Yes. And the reaction on Twitter and in other social media platforms was, you know, he's dead. Think about his wife. Think about this. Think about that. Well, no, think about the women he violated.
Right.
Think about what they're living with. But yes, we have this knack for glorifying. Well, Michael Jackson is the perfect example.
Oh,
how many of us refuse to see him for who he was because he was this quote-unquote great musician. And the reality is the Kobe Bryants, the Cristiano Ronaldo, you know, the Michael Jacksons, even the Kevin Spaceys, being good at what you do and being an abuser or a violator, they're not mutually exclusive.
Well said.
Right? You can be both.
Well said. So what could, so now what could the social services, the justice system, how do we redesign it to ensure that battered women are not socially entrapped by their partners?
Let's start by, education is key to everything, right? Let's start, as you've so poignantly titled this podcast, Breaking the Silence. Let's talk about the fact that it's happening. Let's talk about that it's wrong. And it starts at the schools, but it also starts at the home. It's, you know, the likes of you raising three boys,
right?
Even if you're raising three girls, teaching your son not only to respect women, but to respect themselves. It's teaching our little girls that they can. I love your new definition of bitch. They can be bitches. Standing yeah. up for yourself is more important than being quote unquote girly like or being feminine. So it starts with education. And
that assertiveness is going to be huge because you're going to be looked upon differently if you stand up, but that's the start. You have to.
You have to. Otherwise, we're part of the problem. And it's a lot to ask, you know, it's a lot to ask a little girl or a little boy to stand up and defend themselves or to defend their friend. But we need to instill those values in our children. And then putting pressure on our governments to change the law. It's time.
Is that happening now? Like,
well,
is that?
There's some. So we haven't criminalized coercive control. It's been criminalized in other jurisdictions like New Zealand, Australia, and England. I think Alberta has started talking about it. Ontario hasn't. But it's recognizing that there are crimes. These crimes are crimes, and we need to recognize it. You know, contrary to what Sean Connery believes, it's not okay to slap a grown woman. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
You cannot do that. That is assault. And we need to see it as assault. We need to charge it as assault. And so it's, you know, putting pressure on our policy makers to criminalize these incidences. It's putting pressure on our justice system, on our police force, to see them as crime and charge them.
So do the police have to be trained differently when they deal with domestic?
Okay. You know, think about it, right? You know,
so that's going to require money. You got to put money into this stuff. You got to train people the right way.
So there's this one stat that we were looking at, violence against women, femicide, the killing of women, and violence against women in general cost the, I have this written down, cost society collectively Canadians $7.4 billion a year because of the court cases. If women are either are killed or try to kill, money through our healthcare system, through legal aid. So we're already paying for violence against women.
Oh,
so
I see what you're saying.
What I'm saying, well, let's
prevent
redirect
it.
That money.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? Teaching our law enforcement that, you know, more often than not, women are scared to call out the abuse, or sometimes women don't know that it's a crime. They need to know that it's a crime. They need to take the initiative, but also the responsibility of media reporting the case accordingly, you know, dispelling these rape myths, dispelling myths often associated with violence against women. TV shows that glorify violence against women or glorify, you know, vengeful, women. I never watched it because the title just pissed me off. It was the sitcom My Crazy Ex-Girlfriend.
Okay.
And we often do that, right? It's, you know, oh, my ex was crazy. She did this because she's so crazy. Never stopping to think, well, what did I do to evoke or to bring on that behavior? So it's dispelling these myths, and it starts.
Yeah, and I know that with some media, like you're saying, TV shows as well, for the Black Lives Matter, some episodes of I can't remember who it was, but the Saturday Night Live writer.
She's, okay. That would be Tina Fey, Mr. Tucci. Tina Fey.
She basically, they had a blackface episode. They took it down.
Yeah.
So they're doing this with.
We're starting.
Are you saying that we should be doing this with.
Violence against women.
Yes. These episodes that kind of perpetuate that, we should be taking them down.
Think about the shows that you watch, right? How often is it okay to show the violent rape of a woman? Like, we bleep out swear words. We put warning signs for swear words, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, when we look at CSI is bad for this. Criminal Minds was bad for this. I'm trying to think of other shows where they actually... they show violent rape of women or violence against women and dismiss it as not a big deal.
You're just saying that this is a piece of all this puzzle.
Yes. I think that there isn't one solution, Dave. Like, yeah. You know, it's, and I understand it's such an uphill battle.
I'm hearing you talk, that's what I hear. I go, yeah. Oh my God, this seems like such an uphill battle. And like you said, starting with the young girls, teaching them to stand up. And sometimes that's a lot to ask. You're putting a lot on their plate.
Yes, we are. So it's doable though. It's doable. Right. It takes a lot of commitment. It's dispelling. We started by talking about community values. It's challenging these community values, you know, throwing out these ideas that, you know, this is what a girl should act like, and this is what a boy should act like, you know, that it's okay to say this, you know, you throw like a girl, right? We still use that, right?
And you're saying, and we got to change that language.
We need to change that language. We need to change that attitude, because again, I'm drawing on this Sean Connery, and where his statements come from or his beliefs is a sense of arrogance where he feels entitled to slap a woman because she wouldn't shut up.
Right, right.
So he took it upon himself to shut her up.
Right.
Right? Like this power relation. And it extends in all facets of life. There is this power dynamic in society that continues to perpetuate that it's okay. Violence, it's not that important, you know? And women should take it as a compliment. Sorry, I have to tell this story.
Yeah, yeah.
So you know, I'm not running anymore, but I used to be a runner, and the catcalls, the comments I would get, and I would complain about them because you feel exposed, right? And I would often get the remarks from when I would tell people, "Well, you should take it as a compliment." It's not a compliment when you don't feel safe. It's not a compliment. You feel naked. You feel violated. So it's, you know, it's teaching our boys and our girls that that's not okay.
And then you mentioned a key difference between women and men who experience domestic violence.
Yes.
Men simply don't experience that deep existential terror that engulfs female victims.
And that has to do with the power relations. And at the same time, I don't want to diminish the individual experience that men have, because there are, one can safely argue, and we do acknowledge this later on in our book, it wasn't in any of the excerpts, men are taught to not report violence against men. Right.
Like, again, that would be considered like we saw
unmasculine. Soft.
Yeah. That's
soft. Or I don't know if I'm allowed to say this, but he would be a pussy. Right.
Yeah.
His wife,
we talk about that
him.
on a previous podcast. The word pussy stems from pusillanimous.
So I'm allowed to say it then?
Yeah. Cowardly. It means cowardly.
He's not man enough. He needs to man. How often do we hear man up? So I think there's that one, the psychological trauma of being violated, but second, just the reaction,
right?
You know, so it's there, but statistically, it's still predominantly women who are trapped in abusive relationships. Yeah.
So could we, I think we gave a lot of value here, and I think we started to break the silence. I mean, I really appreciate you coming on here. I mean, this was uncomfortable for me to listen sometimes, but I want to put myself, if I'm uncomfortable, it means I'm growing.
Which is good. And I want you to share that uncomfortableness with your sons.
That's what I'm going to do. Them. Yeah.
And I don't doubt this for a second, but for all your viewers or your listeners out there, teach your young girls to respect themselves and to defend themselves, and teach your young boys to respect women and to respect themselves.
And I don't know if you know this, but I teach a martial arts course, and I taught an after school program at my school when a lot of females came out, and it was just martial arts. Basically, they were feeling empowered. They enjoyed it. They loved it.
It
really did.
I teach them the nose trick, right? Like, that's the one thing I remember from my, but it's true, because you grow up thinking that, you know, kicking a guy in his private area is the best. And apparently that's not true. You know, pushing up against their nose is actually more effective.
Right.
And having that tidbit of information, you feel, not that you can take on the world. There's that sense of, you know, vulnerability, but knowing that you have some tool.
Something. Yeah.
So absolutely. Thank you for empowering these women, Dave.
I'm trying. I'm diving. I'm doing my best always.
Good.
So now, to wind down, normally I do a guess what segment where I ask the guest questions. I kind of want to reverse it. So if you can you be the host of this guess what, and you ask me the questions and kind of put me on the spot?
Okay.
I know we talked about this earlier, and I was telling you if you could just formulate some questions and we see how we do it. This is the first time I'm being put on the spot, which is good.
Well, on your podcast.
Yeah,
God knows I always just put you on the spot.
I know.
At St. Basil's, right?
Yes. Shout out to St. Basil's.
Okay.
Yes.
What?
How many women in Canada have experienced at least one incident of physical or sexual violence? A, 1/4 of women, B, 1/3 of women, or C, 1/2 of women?
I got to go with the most. I'm going to go with half, 1/2 of women.
Half of all women in Canada have experienced at least one incident.
That was easy. I mean, you gave me a nice layup on that one.
Well, Dave, I'm warming you up. But nice, I want your listeners to think about this.
Yeah, I know. Half,
you know, half of the women you know have experienced.
That's what I'm saying when I say I'm shocked, but the women aren't shocked when they hear. They're not going to be shocked hearing that stat.
There's one I had a follow-up. Okay, hold on. How many Canadians say they know someone who has experienced physical violence or sexual abuse? 10%, 50%, or 67%? That was a giveaway.
67%.
That was a giveaway because it was so precise. I'm not doing this very well. I have to make it harder, right? Can you tell I'm on sabbatical? I'm not writing exam questions. But again, so half of all women experience it, but 67% of all Canadians know at least one person. And I think that's underreported.
You know what? And you know what's funny? Not funny, but like, it's so much, yet we don't talk about it. It's not talked about.
Again, it's that whole, it's a private matter, right?
Yeah,
it's between husband and wife or boyfriend and girlfriend.
But we know 67% know it's happening.
Yes. Spousal violence. This is not going to be multiple choice because apparently I'm not good at it. spousal violence. How many cases of spousal violence, percentage wise, is not reported to the police?
How many cases of percentage wise? I'm going to say, I want to have a range. Do I get a range at least?
No. I gave you two, like.
Okay. I'm going to say 75. My birthday's 75. 90, I'm going to say 75% of the cases.
Outstanding. 70%. That's actually pretty good.
Damn.
70% of spousal violence is not reported to police. So this goes back to what we were saying. We don't see.
So 7 out of 10 won't even report it. It'll happen. No. They won't just won't report it.
They won't.
Is that what you're saying? It's up to the women?
No, it's It is. It ultimately, and this is part of the problem, right? You know, women have to take the initiative, not only to lay, to say this is happening to me, but to follow through. And more often than not, women are either not seeing it as violence, don't understand it or violence, or are too scared. And we don't have the support system in society to, you know, every 6 days, a woman is killed in Canada, true or false?
You know, I read that. I read it. That's why I know the answer. It's true.
Isn't that scary?
That's scary. That's gross. That's gross.
And
in Canada. And how that stat is what, 2018?
And this has gone up since COVID, right? Since the shutdown.
Yeah.
Because studies have shown times of crisis, domestic violence. Do you know when the worst day? Oh, here's a question for you.
Super Bowl.
You know this, darn. But Super Bowl is the most dangerous time for a woman.
I know.
Yeah.
How sick is that?
It's 87% of police reported sexual assault victims were women and girls. How many of this 87% were under the age of 25?
Oh my goodness. How many?
So sexual assault, we're calling.
Yeah. 87. Yeah. How many
87 of all of the sexual assaults that were reported to police, 87% of this were women. Victims were women or girls.
And you want me to know of these, how many were
under? How many were under the age of 25%?
I'm going to say 90% of that.
70%. So it's not that high. It's still high.
Yeah.
And here I draw on, you know, sexual violence on campus. And how university and college campuses. And, you know, we like to talk about how the US is bad. We're just as bad as in Canada. If not for the governments getting involved, a lot of university and college campuses didn't even have a policy on sexual assault. More often than not, sexual assault does go underreported in university and colleges. And so it's become a hotbed. Like university campuses are, more and more, they're not becoming safe spaces for women.
And you know what? On that note, I appreciate the game. How did I do?
I think you did really well, Dave. Done. Like, I wasn't keeping score, but if you want a mark, you got an A. Or awesome. Don't you guys do like fours now or something?
Yeah. You know what? Funny about the college campuses. When I was in university, just a funny story, because I like discovering and sharing through storytelling, and people can find value in the storytelling. But I remember in university at York, I went to York, and I remember speaking to female students. They were wearing hoodies, and they were walking with this swagger, and I was ignorant, oblivious, and I was like, why are you walking like that? Habit. I go, what's the habit? When I'm walking alone, I put my hoodie on and I have this little walk, my gait pattern to simulate like I'm a guy. Can you imagine?
Oh, Dave, it goes beyond that. So I, when I would walk, when I had night classes at York and I would walk to my car, I would make sure that I was always on my cell phone. And they're bigger than the ones that we have now.
Yeah.
I would always, and this is something I learned in self-defense class, always make sure I had my keys in my hands.
As a weapon?
It could be used as a weapon. You didn't take the, do you remember the tunnels at York?
Absolutely.
You didn't take the tunnels at York in the evening? Like if you had-
See,
like
as guys, we don't think like, we don't need to
that's
think.
That's white privilege.
Right.
And it's not a bad thing. It's, right. You don't have to worry. Well, talking about sharing stories. And so again, me being a runner, and I, at the time I was living in Thunder Bay, and I lived across the street from the bush, and I loved running in there. Like I would encounter deer almost every time I ran. Right. So I'm running on this one path, and this was actually paved, and I'm just running along, and it was near the end of my run when your energy levels are a little bit lower. Right. And it's like straight from a movie. Two guys in a pickup drive by me, catcalls. I ignore them. And they had driven a bit further. And then I hear tires squeal. And you can hear they did its U-turn. So in that split second, you're thinking, oh my God, I'm not safe. I'm either.
Is your heart rate going up now?
It's, but Dave, this is what I'm thinking. What do I do?
Right.
And my only option was run in the bush, like run into, and I knew that there were deer there. And consciously, you're not thinking that deer are more scared of humans than you are of them. But I'm thinking I'd rather be attacked by a deer than by two men. And the reality was, I don't know if they were looking to stop for me. I don't know what their intentions were.
You're just saying that's the thoughts, that those are the thoughts.
At that point in time, they probably thought, like, they got their shits and giggles.
Yeah.
They made some lewd remark. They did the squealy, you know, U-turn thing, and I got frightened. Right.
Well,
so these are things that we have to think about.
And we got to do the work, because I have nieces. I have friends with daughters that are going to be growing up in this world.
But you don't want your boys to be those two guys in the
pickup. Yep.
You know what I mean? You want
to raise
respectful men.
Absolutely. Yes. Yeah. And that's what it's going to take. You know what, Nadia? Thank you so much.
Thank you, Dave. This was fun.
Yeah, I love talking to you. And hopefully we can have you on again, maybe when the book comes out.
Yes, sounds good.
And thank your co-author as well.
I will. I will let her know.
Because the work that you're doing is what is needed to educate people like me. And then, like my grandmother says, from a flame comes a fire.
I like that.
All right.
Thank you, Dave. Take care.
Bye. Take care.
When I listen to Nadia speak about coercive control, you understand more clearly how Mike Ryan imposed that control. And that media clip presented in the beginning appears very skewed in its representation of the case. Nicole Doucette sounds like a monster in that story, and many can easily be thinking, how did the Supreme Court set her free? But the truth is, many women are currently in abusive situations. That's the reality. At my school, the equity team, which is run by a bunch of teachers, they're running a white ribbon campaign. For it, they're doing shoebox donations for women in shelters. That's excellent. But how does that help women currently in violent relationships? Is this all we can do? Encourage women to go to shelters? Is there anything else we can do to help a woman experiencing this type of violence in her intimate partner relationship? We have to step up. I wish I had answers. Before I sign off, I want to look at some myths. Let's take a look here. Sexual assault is about sex, not violence. Of course it's about violence. Women lie and accuse innocent men of sexual assault. Some people might be thinking for top athletes, let's say, that it's a money grab. You really think, I don't know, maybe they might, but do you really think you want to drag your name through the courts and the media? Unless you're getting paid off handsomely. I don't know. Just doesn't make sense to lie. Normal white men don't commit rape. Okay, that sounds like a big myth. That's ridiculous. And what's normal anyway? Good men and or married men do not sexually assault women. Again, that lends itself to more stupidity like the previous one. And last one here. Finally, women provoke sexual assault. Often women are cautioned to take the proper precautions, and whatever that means. I'm guessing dressing a certain way, I don't know. And those who do not are then accused of failing to prevent attacks. Again, that's shirking the responsibility. I mean, I would never attack a woman, doesn't matter what she's wearing. So that's silly. Anyway, I hope anyone listening can take today's conversation and discuss it with your circle. It's okay if it makes you uncomfortable. That's part of the growth. This was a heavy topic today. Next week, I'm not doing a heavy topic. Next week, I'm going to be doing a Bitcoin question and answer. Bitcoin is moving. People are asking questions. Some people don't even know what Bitcoin is. And for those people, I will welcome you into the 21st century with open arms the safest way possible, and I promise to be gentle. Anyway, thanks to all for listening and supporting me. Subscribe so you can keep up to date, and hopefully I can continue to come through with the content that we all can grow from. I'm hoping that it gives us all value. Again, this was a heavy topic, and I know after this airs, I will be continually discussing this matter with some colleagues at work. So that's the whole point. But that's it for me. Please, everyone, be safe. And don't ever forget to add, that's right, a little funk to your day.